Welcome back, everyone, to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I'm your host, Meg Krueger. I'm the content lead with Pioneer Athletics. Today, I am joined by two Ohio natives. So that means we've got grit, we've got attitude, we've got it all going on. I am joined by my co-host, Weston Appelfeller, and Brian Hall. So I'm going to turn it over to Weston to introduce the two of them.
Thank you, Meg. I appreciate that. I am Weston Appelfeller. I am the market technical advisor at Pioneer Athletics. Excited about our guest today. He comes to us from Northwest Ohio, a leader in our industry, especially at the local level. I got to know this person when he was the president of what was then the Ohio Sports Turf Managers Association, where we served on that board together. I'd like to welcome the facilities and maintenance director at Sylvania Recreation, Mr. Brian Hall. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Meg and Weston both. That was awful nice what you said there, Weston. I don't think myself as an industry leader. I just think of myself as an average Joe, but thank you very much.
Well, I definitely think you are. So, and we'll touch base on a little bit of that as we go through. But I think the way we like to do this is the first question, I like to hit you with a little bit of surprise, something you haven't seen yet. And but I think it's easy and I think it's very important to talk about right off the bat. So tell us what you do in life outside of work, who you spend your time with, what you like to do, and what that looks like.
That's pretty simple. I spend a lot of time with my family. I have a son that's 14 years old. That's in the sports, been involved in sports all of his life. Currently playing football for our high school, our local high school. He plays soccer. He's a soccer referee. Plays baseball, golf. But I think, you know, my love is the outdoors in general, hunting, fishing. I'm an avid hunter. I spend a ton of my time outside. Actually, we are on the eve of archery season here in Ohio. So my focus today and for the last couple of weeks has been there, and just love spending time with my family, my wife, Jamie. We like to try to get as many trips, weekend trips out as we can. My mom and dad spend time on the farm with those guys, but a lot of it's around outdoors and the family.
Great. That's great. So, well, I guess we'll get started and jump right in. Can you give us a little bit of what you've done there, how long you've been there, what your career has looked like? Just lay the groundwork for us.
Yeah, I started back in 1999, been a few gray hairs ago. Started here as a ground supervisor. In college, I was drifting a little bit, ran into a few different people that helped guide me into my passion of just being in the outdoors. Started working for the Toledo Metro Parks through a class that I took. The instructor was a ranger for the Metro Parks. And in the middle of class, I just had this epiphany. And I walked up to him after class, say, hey, I'm looking for a job. You know, what can I do to stay in the industry? And I don't know how many years later it was, 5-6 years later, after I had moved on from the Metro Parks, graduated from college, he called me up and said, hey, there's a position open in Sylvania. Didn't know anything about it. Had no official training, no education in turf grass management, but came here, interviewed as a grounds supervisor, got that position in 1999. 2001 was promoted up to the assistant facilities and maintenance director, and in 2005 was promoted up to the facilities and maintenance director. So I've been here, I think this is my 24th season, if I'm doing the math right. Usually I ask Siri to do the math for me, but my position as facilities and maintenance director is pretty vast. Jack of all trades, master of none. The joke around our agency is if nobody else can do it, maintenance will do it. And they call us for just about everything. So athletic fields is probably, I would say, 30% of what my focus is. My focus is we have aquatic facilities that we operate. We have an outdoor concert venue. We have just passive parks, trails, playgrounds, all kinds of stuff that I'm responsible for above and beyond all the athletic fields here at Sylvania Recreation. We do have a great, great team of managers that manage some of these other facilities. But when it comes to like the buildings and everything like that and the athletic fields, they look to me and then look to my team to help us resolve any issues that may pop up. So obviously with the sports field management, that's, you know, one of my big loves. I grew up playing ball, and we like to see the athletes out there. And a very large part of this facility is the athletics. We've got about 100 acres of turf that we manage. So there's a ton. Jack of all trades, master of none. You need a light switch installed or concrete poured or the aquatics facility spruced up. You know, we're out there doing it all.
It sounds like you've sat through a few OSHA classes, if nothing else.
Liability is the first thing I think of when we do anything, unfortunately. I'm constantly looking for liabilities out there.
That's funny. You know, you just named like a bunch of stuff that you're responsible for, but I think it's lost in the importance of what your job is. And I think that can be best described by the number of visitors or the amount of hours that are played at your facility. Do you have any idea what that looks like? How many people get there each year?
I try to track on an annual basis. Again, in this position, I spend a lot of time staring at it. I've got two screens here, so I'm back and forth between you guys. But I've normally see right around 350,000 people that come into our facility. We track that annually based on the number of events that we have, and then we estimate the number of participants as well as the spectators. But yeah, we're in that 350,000 spectators or participants here.
Out of this world, truly. That's crazy. What does that look like field wise? You talked about 100 acres, but like how many fields is that, you know, in how many different sports are happening at the facility?
Man, our primary focus is going to be our soccer and our baseball / softball fields. We have 8 lighted baseball / softball fields. They're fully skinned infields, and we can play everything from T-ball up to adult softball and some of your older kids. We're not at the high school level out here. And those fields start seeing use April 1st, and we'll play all the way through until October. Our turf areas, multiple sports. We play everything from soccer, lacrosse. We've had rugby out here. Ultimate Frisbee, if anybody's ever seen that. We've hosted adult flag football tournaments. We've got just your normal youth activities out here. We've had upwards of 54 grass sport fields on this complex at one time. Obviously, they're all varying in size. But our typical spring, we are painting about 30 fields a week for our soccer and lacrosse or flag football, tackle football. And that's typically your April through May, and then we'll pick back up in mid-August through the end of October. But during the summer months, it sounds like there might be a break there, but unfortunately there is not. That's where we put a lot of our tournaments. We've got a lot of outside groups that come in and play. It's like a host site for a lot of these leagues for soccer. So we are busy all the time, it seems.
Yeah,
like.
I'll say. I'm just trying to wrap my head around that.
How big is the crew again?
How big would I like the crew to be? we budget for about 17 seasonal and part-time staff members. I've got 7 full-time employees on my staff. That fluctuates a little bit based on availability. Obviously, the labor challenges recently has played a huge role in that. But fortunate to have a phenomenal full-time management staff that has been here a very long time. You know, I've been here 24 years. My assistant, Chris Casper, has been here 24 years as well. We both started the same year here. I've got several guys that are approaching maybe the 10-year range with us. So we've got a lot of tenure here with a lot of guys, not a lot of turnover. So it's our seasonal staff that we try to work on here recently. But I can't speak highly enough of the team that we do have.
That's awesome. And, you know, when I was just trying to wrap my head around all that you just went over, this is a question that's going to be off, you know, that what we didn't send over, so surprise. But yeah, what I'm thinking when you were talking about all those fields, all those sports, what comes into my mind is that's managing expectations and, you know, combating misconceptions with all of the coaches involved, all of the parents involved, managing the players and how they treat your facility. How much of that really, you know, takes up a part of your job or just takes up brain capacity, just making sure you have all those people on the same page as you?
I have always found, and I learned this early in my career, that you need to spend time with the ones that are coming to you, the tournament directors, the league directors, and you need to sit down and just explain to them what their expectations need to be, what our expectations need to be. But yeah, here recently we've been dealing with that. We have competing clubs that utilize this facility as their home facility. And they're constantly looking at one another saying, well, why do they get X and we don't get X? And just trying to combat that, you know, that D1 level expectation versus, you know, this is Parks and Rec. Even though we are at a higher level, we've got to maintain that balance. And the biggest way that I've found to do that is just communicating on a daily basis. We have an internal program staff that runs all of our house leagues. Every day that I'm at work, I go over to our administrative office and I stop in everybody's office and I say, hey, what's going on? What's the problem today? What can I help you with? I give them feedback from my team. And just having that daily communication allows that line of communication to open up, and you can resolve a lot of problems just by doing that. And I try to do the same thing with all the user groups. That's probably only about half of the user groups that actually use this facility. So yeah, there's a lot of email communication going on, phone calls, sometimes sitting down over a beer helps. So yeah, it's, I can't stress communication enough. Communication is one thing that I've really tried to get out there, and perception is reality. You mentioned it earlier, you know, parents sometimes can, and social media can sometimes skew things. And yeah, we're constantly trying to make everybody look good. We don't want to drag anybody through the mud.
Of course.
I can rarely think of a time where sitting over a beer hasn't helped. It's when you get to multiple beers that
yes.
Some ideas get lost.
That's when the communication kind of gets garbled.
So since you started there, and you know, you have been a large part of different trade associations and seen different things evolve, what do you think the evolution of a groundskeeper has looked like since, you know, 20 years ago now?
Yeah, this is something that I've noticed, not only internally with what our responsibilities are, but across the board at other complexes, other professional facilities. You know, back in the day, you were the athletic grounds guy, and that was your job, the athletic grounds. And as I think some of these facilities, or even my facility, for example, I'm responsible for X amount of dollars in rental income. So I have to go out and try to find rentals to help make up part of my income for my budget. There's a lot of professional stadiums and facilities where that groundskeeper now is an event manager. And not only are they an event manager, they have no off days. You know, the team's in town for seven straight days. And the team's out of town for five. Well, those five, we've got corporate events, this kind of event. So you still need to be there. The sports turf manager has become a 7 day a week job. 20 hours a day. It's crazy how much time some of these guys are putting in, guys and gals. And I don't think it was like that back in the day. And unfortunately for the worse, I think a lot of people are leaving the industry because of that. And we all need more pay. Everybody, I don't think I've ever met anybody that said they were paid exactly what they thought they were worth. But the more important thing is the talent that is leaving the industry because of the overwork, the over expectations, and they're just burnt out. That's the biggest thing that I've seen today.
Definitely. And we've seen, you know, that stereotypical, you know, grumpy groundskeeper role where they just get on their mower and they like to be by themselves. That is so far from the truth. You know,
right.
You now
right.
have to be a business professional. You have to be a politician in some sense. You have to be a manager, a leader, and you have to be at the top of your game every day while, you know, managing a team to provide a product. The stereotypes no longer fit the bill for any sense. But I would love to solve all of our problems, you know, with a simple conversation, but it's so robust. But, you know, walk us through a typical season, whether that's fall ball or that's your spring season. Let's pick a season, walk us through that, and then we can start diving into what elements are at play when really planning out those seasons.
You know, I think one of my most favorite seasons, and maybe it is for a lot of guys and gals out there doing what we do, is our spring season, the April through May. All of your planning, everything that you've put together all winter long, all the training that you've done with your staff, the equipment that you've needed to purchase, you actually get to finally take it out and put it to use. But that, to me, our opening Saturday for soccer and baseball, we have big hoopla and everything that goes on out here. Seeing the kids out on the fields, it just warms your heart. It takes me back to when I was a kid. I remember vividly my mom signed me up for T-ball, and I was so mad. I did not want to play T-ball and fell in love with baseball and have so many great memories from that. I kind of see that in the kids that come out here. And our spring leagues, again, we start in April. We've got about 30 soccer grass sports out here. We do have 25-ish baseball and softball diamonds around the community that we are responsible for. Eight of them are here at Paysetter, and they're lighted so they can play later in the evening. That definitely keeps us busy in the spring months. During that time, we have four tournaments that we also host in our downtime, I guess, if you will. We kind of squeeze them in between everything else. And then that kind of comes to a peak Memorial Day weekend, kind of closing out our spring season, where we host a soccer event where right now we're down to about 225 soccer teams that come in for the Memorial Day weekend. I think we were at 340 for that weekend. And yeah, that's a big event because we're not using the same fields that we use for our spring season for this tournament. They're all completely different. So we've got to take those 30 fields that we had in the spring, flip them, and put another 30 fields out in the period of about 10 days, get tents, police. We don't have enough parking here at this facility, so I've got to schedule busing, you know, the portable toilets, the staffing, and working with the club. And that as soon as you hit the day after Memorial Day, I start breathing. Because you know you've made it through what is probably the most challenging part. And part of that is because the staff is so new. You've got your full-time staff that helps you get through and get everything rolling, but your seasonal staff is green. You got to train a lot of them. They've never done this before, and that's the meat of our season. So that's the kind of breakdown of 2 months of our season.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned your full-time staff and having guys that have been there for a long time. How much of the planning do you delegate off to them or bring them in? I guess delegate's probably the wrong word. How much do you incorporate their thoughts and opinions into this and have them help out with it?
I would go a little further, Weston, and say that I include our entire staff all the way down to our seasonals. Sitting here looking at these two screens all day long doesn't allow me to see what happens out there. Again, me being a little more administrative, I don't work many weekends, so I don't see a lot of the stuff that happens on the weekend. So I don't see a ton of what's going on out there. So I incorporate my managers all the time. We ask our seasonal staff, what are they seeing? We encourage them to come talk to us, tell us what they're seeing out there on a regular basis, and we'll make adjustments based on that. My assistant, Chris Casper, he runs the day-to-day out here. I don't touch any of the day-to-day what gets done. He and I sit directly apart from one another, so we're constantly communicating on what's going on. Every Friday, my management team, we sit down and we have at least an hour staff meeting going over what's going on right now and what's coming up in the next 10 days so that everybody knows, everybody's on the same page. Plus, it gives them time to give input. So long explanation there, but we encourage everybody to give us feedback. Open door policy. I'm not a huge fan of the chain of command, the hierarchy. I don't like being the boss. I want everybody to be able to openly discuss any topics to help us look better as a group, as a team.
That's great to, yeah, really establish ownership in the gig from top down. Right. And, you know, from in your position, when you're talking budgets, you mentioned you have a budget meeting coming up here. When you're talking with decision makers in that sense, you know, how easy is the buy-in? Do you feel like you have a good established, you know, seat at the table where they defer to you to make those decisions, they trust you, that type of relationship? Do you think you've established something good there?
100%. And I think a lot of that also has to do with the board that I report to. They've been there a while as well, so they kind of know how things go. And I'm not going to be the type of guy that walks in there with all these, you know, chemical words and industry talk, and just kind of, I try to dumb it down to them and really involve them as much as I can, even though a lot of it they still don't truly understand. But I've always kind of taken the approach. When I was a child or younger, I went to my parents and I said, give me $25. That never worked out very well. Give me $25 because I need to buy a pair of new socks. That works out a little bit better. So I've always kind of taken that approach with the board. I've heard strategies of, you know, don't tell your board too much because then they get too involved. But I've always kind of taken the opposite approach, is I'm going to lay it all out there, and that way you can't tell me I didn't tell you. And that's helped me develop a great working relationship with our board members and my boss, who I report directly to when it comes to putting the budgets and everything together. And I just hope that works, and our track record of, you know, not going over budget or spending too much has really helped as well. So
you mentioned that you have, you know, your two screens of information up there. You talked about giving your board information as well. What data points are you collecting and then using to relay to help get more budget or to help get more help? What are you using there?
And that goes back to getting my managers involved. I've got my assistant. He also tracks one of the line items in our budget, which is our repair and maintenance. I've got another manager that tracks all of our machinery and equipment expenses. Every spark plug, every oil filter for our Toro 3500, we track those expenses. And that's what these guys are helping track for me as far as the data expenses go. We use a payroll software that helps me track, well, how many hours are my guys working? When we host these events, the guys hate it, but we track right down to individual trash bags. How many trash bags did we use during this event? How many hours did we work? How much paint did we use? And this is leading up to the event, during the event, and after the event. So at the end, I can compile an event report, take that to my boss or the board, and just say, hey, this is why we do stuff. Recently, we purchased a tiny mobile robot, one of these autonomous deals. The board was 100% on board with the purchase of this thing. So I didn't have to do this, but we started tracking labor costs, paint costs. And I put a spreadsheet together and took that to them and said, see, this expense up front saved us, you know, 70% in labor costs. And it's a lot of what we do on a daily basis, although it's monotonous and nobody really enjoys tracking things, it helps you down the road and helps me develop my budgets. And yeah, it's a very, very important part of what we do on a daily basis.
Are you using a specific program when you do that, or is it just Excel and clipboard and your guys are writing down stuff and you're plugging it in?
Yeah, we don't have anything. The only software that we would have is our payroll software. And that helps track a lot of that information, but everything's done on Excel simply because we build it once and I don't want to have to rebuild it on another one. But yeah, we're on a network, and I've got guys that literally every day when the work orders go out for mowing, all those mowing work orders come back in and he tracks the number of hours, what gentlemen spent on that piece of equipment. And so I can go back and tell him exactly how many hours on a mower every year we're spending. And that's his job. Every day he tracks it, files it, scans it. And these guys are all involved in that to help us meet our end goal.
So you're the groundskeeper that all of us groundskeepers always wanted to be and said over the winter, we're going to do that. But then we get 2 weeks into the year and we're like, nope, never mind. This is too hard.
It's been a challenge to try to find time to develop some of these things. But when you got a phenomenal team that, and I've got to give my assistant props. He came to me and said, hey, I want to run the day to day. Cause before I was running the work orders and doing all that kind of stuff. And little by little, these guys are like, hey, you're too busy. I want to take some off your plate. And of course I was a little hesitant at first, but they saw that, you know, I've become more administrative and I'm in meetings all the time, and meetings breed more work. And with them doing that, it allows me more time to unfortunately stare at these two screens. So that's where I get the time to do all this stuff, is because of the team that I have.
And, you know, definitely a positive that, like you said, with like the new painting robot, like you were able just to come in and you didn't even have to, you know, fight too hard. But for a groundskeeper that, you know, may have these data points, they're already doing that step and they've got that, you know, ready to go, but they may not have a seat at the table where, you know, they're not even being asked to present because people aren't even consulting them in the first place. What advice can you give someone in that position to really, you know, help secure themselves as, you know, the person to be consulted and invited to these conversations? What advice can you really give someone in that position?
I think the first thing that a couple things popped in my head real quick is one, again, get to know the decision makers, develop those relationships with them. Don't be known. I've been told sometimes I can be abrasive, but don't be abrasive all the time. You know, if you see something that's not right, approach it the proper way. Don't go in there, arms are flailing and F-bombs are coming left and right. And I don't know if you can bleep that out or not, but you've got to come off as a professional. Because that's what we are. That's what this whole thing is. That's what we're fighting for, is we're professionals. We're not just somebody that mows the grass. There's some talent that is involved, some knowledge that's involved. And I think if you present it the right way to the right people and represent yourself in the industry in a proper manner, I don't see why you can't get a seat at the table where somebody is going to start to respect you. And it only takes one. And then that builds from there. And trust me, when I got this job and I had to start going to board meetings, boy, I was scared to death. And I always thought that they were, you know, all powerful and these magical people. They're just people. They're just people. And they're looking to you for information. And if you just share information with them and present yourself and your team in a positive manner, it's a slow process sometimes. And there's some places that you're not going to win, but never give up. I tell my son that all the time. Never quit.
Great advice for all avenues of life, for sure.
Yep.
So I think, Brian, that was great advice that you just gave there. I think too often it is lost on people that, you know, you get extremely mad at certain situations or angry at certain conversations you may have, and you don't take the time to go back in and calm yourself down before you are talking to a coach or one of your bosses or whatever. And I think what you just mentioned there is about being professional is something that is lost a lot on people. And so I appreciate your mentioning, you know, having the professionalism when you talk to people. But, you know, I often tell people, calm down a little bit, make sure you think things through.
Right.
And I'm sure that was a lesson you have taught your staff as well. So when we go and look to, you know, having these conversations, then how does your previous experiences through the years lead up to having budget talks and being able to ask, you know, you've talked a little bit about using the data points, but when you ask for capital expenses or things like your tiny mobile robot, how do you ask for those? What do you use as points to go for new items? Where do you find them? What kind of research are you doing in order to get those as well? So long-winded question, but sorry.
Yeah, well, and there's a ton of different answers to that, but to each line item, it's a little bit different. My budget proposal, when I turn it into my boss, is probably in the neighborhood of 30 pages. Each individual page is a line item.
Mm-hmm.
And on that page for that line item, it gives me, again, that chance to explain to mom and dad why I need the money. It tells them, you know, what our expenses were last year, what I expect our expenses to be this year. Is there any major changes on that? I have a pretty extensive breakdown on a couple line items, our repair and maintenance and our equipment. And I will take those big spreadsheets and I dump them right in there to show, well, how much money am I going to spend on irrigation heads? How much money do I plan on spending on fungicides? How much money do I spend on tires for the trucks? So I'm trying to answer all their questions. And a lot of that, Weston, goes back to the tracking that we've done throughout the year. My team has done throughout the year. And when you start to see trends from year to year, then you can kind of adjust for it. You know, fuel expenses is just one of those that you just throw a dart at a dartboard and guess how much money you're going to spend on fuel. Because I can tell you how many gallons we, you know, use about 4,500 gallons annually of diesel, but what's the price going to be? And those are some of the things that are challenging. We've utilized demos. You mentioned the painter, the painter that we had prior to the autonomous tiny mobile robot, was a beam rider, I believe was the name of it. And you don't need to string anything out. You would just measure it. And, you know, I didn't really believe it, but we had the representatives come out and we did a side-by-side comparison. My guys were using the old string method with this new beam rider. And this guy, once we said go, he was painting a field within 30 seconds where my guys were still measuring stuff out. And we took a lot of that data from that side-by-side comparison, put it into my budget proposal, sent it off to the board. And I try to answer as many questions in that document before I hand it to them. And only in the close to, geez, how long have I been in this position? Geez, Tim. Almost 20 years, I don't think I've been asked to explain something in more detail more than three times for any of the line items in my budget. So get the information where you can, Weston. The worst thing you can do is make up information, but try to explain it the best that you possibly can, why you're going to need it, and then how long it's going to be around to help you out.
That's really, I love what you just said there. The worst thing you can do is try and, you know, make it up and then be seen as somebody when it's, you know, shows up in your face that you were lying. And really a groundskeeper has really no excuse to ever have to make it up, because the nature of this industry is, you know, such a, like, everyone benefits from sharing that wealth of knowledge. And, you know, I know that you're somebody that really advocates for that. You've set up field days for years. You go to the conferences. You really play a huge role in that industry sharing. But how important do you really think that is? And how do you encourage others to really tap into that, you know, that wealth of knowledge? Like, because somebody, you know, starting day one in a Parks and Rec position, they're not going to have those systems that you have in place. But if they come to a field day and pick your brain about it, you know, it starts them off on the right foot.
Nail on the head there again, Meg. It's I go back to my first couple of years. I remember the first conference I went to. And I sat down. I want to say it might have been Joe Remelsbach giving a presentation on Dollar Spot, whatever, which is pretty normal. And I'm like, man, I am way over my head. I've got no previous experience with this. I didn't have an education. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoyed working outdoors. I'd worked in the parks, but the technical side of turf, I never touched any of that. And I was in deep. And I was a little questionable of how long I was going to make it. Boyd Montgomery, who was my boss at the time, got me involved in the Ohio Sports Turf Managers Association. Actually, I think it was the GLSTMA, the Great Lakes Sports Turf Managers Association, got me involved in OTF and STMA at national level. Met a ton of professionals with open arms to help me out. And I opened my ears. And I think that's kind of what has led me to really pushing that learning, that continuing education, to try to get involved, to try to get as many people involved. I did one round on the Ohio Sports Turf Managers Board, went through the top to bottom and got out. And now we've rebranded and come under the OTF, the Ohio Turf Grass Foundation banner. and now I'm back involved on the Sports Turf Council. And yeah, it's work. It takes time away from things that I'd like to be doing, but I cannot thank people like Weston and Darren Daly and Brian Gimble and all those guys. You know, I'm sorry, I started naming names because I can't name them all. I got James Lavity in there, Matt Duncan, all those guys that I've met through the years have got me here in this chair. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to give back as much, because I know some of the turf programs may not be as strong as what they used to be. And when you graduate with a turf program, there's a lot of different opportunities, not just in Ohio. But I also know that I can take a kid from high school, teach him, grow him up into something that I am. And I've seen a lot of our interns that have come from our program here at Sylvania Recreation, and we do a dual internship with the Mud Hens. They're out and they're making a name for themselves. Mm-hmm. And proud papa moment, you know, you're really happy about that. So I'm a product of everybody in this industry. I'm a product of these associations, and I could not be more proud to be involved and help pass the knowledge along. So it's a labor of love, I guess you could say.
I have two things to add there, Meg, before we go forward. One is, he mentioned that he did one full term going through the ranks of the Ohio Sports. That's like 15 years. So they were 2-year terms. So he's no literally, you know, he's been doing this for 20 some years, 15 of it. He's been a board member probably. So, and the other one is I never got a chance to thank Brian. In 2012, when I come back to the Columbus Crew, Brian called me and said, "Hey, do you want to be involved in the Ohio Sports Surf Managers Association?" And I said, "Wait, yeah, I do." And he said, "Great, you're the secretary now, or some role." And so I didn't even have a chance to say anything, but he put me on it, and that helped provide a little bit of guidance as I got to know a lot more people, and I felt more comfortable with being, you know, in Ohio and working again in Columbus. And then, you know, got more involved in the national level. And so, Brian, I would like to say thank you for that. So
thanks,
I appreciate
Weston.
It. So,
so sweet. I think we're ready for the weather report. Are you ready,
yeah.
Weston? Okay.
I'm ready. You can go ahead. I'll let you do this one. So.
I can kick one off because I got a good one. These are like around this time when October baseball is about to take place. I've seen it for a few years now. Major league head groundskeepers have started to kind of rattle off what their season looked like. I know Nicole Sherry did it last year, where she talked about the number of tarp pools the crew did, how many seasonal employees that included. And Max Wadsworth with the Washington Nationals posted one this week. And this was something I love to see, because it's not only combating those misconceptions out there in the industry on what it takes to be a part of a crew, but it also is just fun for us in the industry to look at what that crew accomplished this season. So he had documented that at the end of their home schedule, they had 80 games, 62 tarp pools, 2 full field flooring covers, and a staff of 40 that executed everything to the fullest. So that's a direct quote from him. And when I read that, I was just like, you know, a simple sentence, but what that encompassed, what they right. were able to accomplish this season. So I love this time of year when the MLB is closing out, and you kind of get that recap from, you know, what everyone was able to accomplish, because there's so many seasonal employees, so many full times, so many veterans involved to make that kind of happen.
So my weather report for this week, the thing that has me excited about turf grass is on Wednesday night, I went to my son's soccer practice, and it's in a big complex similar to Brian's. And I saw a little league team practicing there. And as they wound up the night and it got done training, I saw two young boys, maybe 10-ish, dragging the infield. And for that, you know, I saw so much hope there. Is there may be another generation of groundskeepers coming behind, because they looked like they were having fun. The coach was making them do the manual work of it, which is great to see somebody taking care of the field outside of just the parks director. Yeah, that's my thing that's got me excited in the sports turf. So, Ryan, let's turn it over to you. You got anything? put you on the spot.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one just from the fun standpoint, but you know, I'm gonna take a personal approach on this thing. The last, you know, many years of my career, I've had access to a lot of great professional facilities, great friends. I can just pop in at any time to go to one of their games, but I never really wanted to do it because I always found myself talking shop. And I think the thing that I like the most right now in my life is my son playing, you name the sport, because I can go to an athletic field and not have to worry about the condition of the field.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll critique it a little bit here and there, but I'm not here for that. So my future, the next couple of years in high school, I'm really excited about going to sports turf fields and not having to worry about maintaining those.
That's fun.
Awesome. That's fun. I love that. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. I don't think I'll ever be able to fully get my head wrapped around what you guys managed there. The numbers were too big for me to really conceptualize how it all happens, but that's only more kudos to you and what you and your staff has going on over there.
Thank you, Meg. Thank you, Meg.
It has been great, Brian, getting to interview you too. I mean, I did a little bit of homework, made sure I was ready for it, and I caught up with some of your old alumni as well. And the amount of people that have come through your facility that are now doing great things in our industry is, you know, a testament to what you've done there. So, you know, congratulations on the time you've had there, and good luck moving forward for the next, 10 years. And if you're at 24, you know, you're not getting too far away from having thoughts of when you can retire. So, you know, as you move through this portion of your career, man, I can't wait to see what you got going. So.
Thank you, Wes. And again, Meg, thank you for inviting me. Had a great time. Love sharing as much as I possibly can. And hopefully I'll see you guys down the road.
Absolutely.
For sure. It's conference season. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other soon.
It is.